Hello, welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where the term anonymous scout probably refers to a friend that Lenny made at the dog park. Do people still name their dog Scout? It's like a very traditional dog name. Somebody recently pointed out to me that people are now increasingly give their children super old-fashioned names, you know, like Gerald or Emma. Emma's not an old-fashioned name. But then they give their dogs, like, human names from the 90s, like Jennifer. I've never met a dog named Jennifer. Dan. I feel like this would have been a good thing to bring up with Spencer, our Caucasian correspondent, last week. And so last week, you guys know, marked the advent of draft season. And this week, we're going to continue with our draft discussion and analysis. We're going to get real deep in it. We're going to drop our very first mock draft. I am joined by two guests today. At the end of the podcast, I have a special bonus interview with one of the draft prospects who might come up during our mock draft. He's a top prospect. You might remember him from the Asian Shrine on High Noon that Pablo Torre and I built. If you watch that show, his name is Taylor Rapp, safety at Washington. It's a really fun interview. But before we get to that, at the very end, I am joined by, actually, like Spencer, another former correspondent from The Morning Roast, RIP, good pal of mine, senior writer at ESPN who covers college football, so he knows these guys. He's written stories about some of them. Welcome to the show, Joel Anderson.
Hey, Mina. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad I could follow the white correspondent, Spencer.
Do you have any thoughts on the dog discussion? I didn't mean to exclude you from giving dogs inappropriate human names.
Well, you know, I've never really owned my own dog, but I did have sort of, you know, co-custody or shared custody of a dog when I was little, and I named it Dominique after Dominique Wilkins, and I think that's sort of a 90s name. So I can sort of see that, but that was actually in the 90s. So
I cannot wait to tell Dominique Foxworth. How did this not come up on the radio show that you had a dog named Dominique?
Wait a minute. As I said that, I just realized that. Oh, my God. Wow. I never told him that. Are you a
You think it would. Joel would be, like, on the pantheon of human names that would be hilarious for dogs, Jennifer, Dan, I think Joel, like, meeting someone who, hey, this is my dog, Joel, that'd be a pretty funny one. Joel.
A good Old Testament name for a dog, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes. Glenn was also another one that I like. Or giving your dog, like, an initial name, like TJ, but just TJ, like not even explaining what TJ stands for is another move. So we're going to do a mock draft this week, and we're going to skip the mailbag. Apologies to people who have been leaving questions or views. Keep leaving them. We're going to get to them. At some point, I might just do like a mega mailbag. But at the end, we will do dinks and dunks with you before moving on to our interview with Taylor. But first, I want to just kind of set the ground rules, explain to people what we're doing with the mock draft, because there's a lot of different ways to do mock drafts. You can try to predict what would happen. And if I was doing that style of mock draft, trying to, you know, like the Kuiper big board you see on ESPN.com, I would probably have all four quarterbacks in the first round. Now, I do not think all four quarterbacks should go in the first round. And that's the kind of draft you and I are going to do. It's going to be a draft of who teams should take, not who we think they're going to take. So is that okay with you?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, even as we kind of, I mean, is it a secret to tell people that we sort of went over this a little bit? And I felt that even under this construct, I felt constrained a little bit. But it's fine. We can just get into it.
Wow. Wow. Already rebelling against the construct of the show. So to that end, Joel and I are going to go back and forth so that we are forced to kind of make adjustments. If a guy we like is off the board, you know, and I'm picking for Tampa Bay, and Joel takes someone for Oakland who's right above them that I want for Tampa Bay, I'll have to recalibrate. We may have, there may have been a little bit of pre-draft tampering, as he alluded to. No big deal, just to reduce the friction. It's not a big deal. But before we get to the mock, I wanted to take a quick second to tell you guys about Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. This graduation season, get the NBA fan in your life a Tissot watch. The Tissot Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. Shop now at us.tissotshop.com. You know, I could have really used a Tissot watch last week, Joel. I was in Denver, and I almost missed my plane because I forgot to make an adjustment for Mountain Time. Mountain Time is such a scam.
What a random time zone, too. It's just like, it's the time zone that everybody forgets about. It's the best time zone, but it's also the one everyone forgets about.
It's just really inconsiderate, I think, to those of us in the other good, normal time zones. Is Arizona who goes first on Mountain Time? That was my attempt at a segue. I'm going to take Arizona. I'm going to go first. So that's the way we're going to do this. I'm going to go one, you go two, I go three. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's your podcast. All right. You're allowed to go first. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we'll start first. I am Steve Keim, who was very well-dressed recently at the combine, I noticed. Yeah, looking good these days, Steve. But really, it feels like I'm actually Cliff Kingsbury because this is Cliff Kingsbury pick. And I'm going to take Kyler Murray. And so we're operating under the should construct, and that does throw a little wrench in this. Like, I'm taking Kyler Murray in part because I think they're going to take Kyler Murray. And I think they should take Kyler Murray because they want Kyler Murray, because they think he's the better quarterback, because Cliff Kingsbury wants to build around him. And I think if you are an NFL team and you like a quarterback and you want to build around him, take that quarterback, right? So I'm not sure. I've talked way too much on this podcast about Josh Rosen, so I'm gonna kind of skip over that. I think people have been a little bit overly critical of him and unfair about it. Taking Kyler Murray at number one, Joel, to me, you know, you'd want to get proper value for Josh Rosen. I'm not sure if that means you trade him now. The idea would be to get, say, Washington's pick at 12 or 15, rather. But it's not clear if that's going to happen. I just want to ask you, before we kind of talk about Kyler, like, would you hold on to Josh Rosen maybe into the preseason to try to get more value? Would you even hold on to him for an entire year? Or do you think you want to just get him out the door so you can focus on Kyler if you're Arizona?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think you want to get rid of Josh just so that, like, there's no friction, there's no confusion. You don't want to go into camp with, like, that Robert Griffin, Kirk Cousins sort of situation, even though they were both drafted in the same draft. So I just kind of feel like you just don't want anybody looking over their shoulder. You don't want any doubts about what's the actual direction of our franchise here. Even though, I mean, there are legitimate questions about, like, the directions of the franchise, you just don't want that over anybody's head. You don't want Kyler, you know, answering questions about Josh. So, yeah, I would try to get rid of Josh as soon as possible. But the problem, and it's not, this is not a reflection of Kyler. And I know you said you talked about Josh a lot. I just think Josh isn't as bad as everybody said he was. And in fact, if you had asked me this question last year, I thought he was the best prospect going into the draft last year, the best quarterback prospect.
Really?
And so just giving up. Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought that, like, just in terms of fit in the NFL, like, you know, people have talked so much about his intelligence, but I mean, I think they actually are, like, he has, like, really good football intelligence. He has a beautiful arm. He didn't work with a lot at UCLA and still was very productive and kept him in a lot of games. I just think that there's a lot there. maybe it wasn't meant to work, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'm not laughing at your take. I'm just laughing at the fact this podcast gets sidetracked by praising Josh Rosen literally every week and defending him. Because Spencer and I had like a 20-minute digression last week, defending him, defending the situation in college, defending his horrible situation last year. And the horrible situation is my concern about taking Kyler and not getting another first-round pick or, you know, another high pick just because he is walking into a very bad situation. I mean, team needs why. The whole offensive line is a absolute disaster. Heaven knows they could use a Nick Bosa or a polished pass rusher. They need wide receivers. They could use a tight end. Like, the Cardinals have so many needs across the board, which is why I think the Kyler thing isn't 100% obvious, because, man, if they could get some sort of pick package or something, this team has so much building to do, and I'm starting to talk myself out of it, so I'm just, let's take Kyler. Who do you got for number two?
So I know what we're supposed to do. I know what the construct of this draft is supposed to be. And I'm supposed to take Nick Bosa, but I'm not going to take Nick Bosa. I'm going to take Ed Oliver for the San Francisco 49ers, and it's because he is ridiculous. And, I mean, you guys talked about this on the podcast last week, but if we just go back to, like, 2 years ago, when everybody realized, like, Ed Oliver is going to be the number one pick when he comes out. That was always, like, sort of the consensus around this dude. And all of a sudden, we get to the eve of the draft, and it's like, well, I don't know. Maybe he's not big enough. maybe, you know, we don't know exactly what position he can play in the NFL. And I'm just like, dude, he's a grenade. He's rolling a live grenade on the line of scrimmage every play. And I think Nick Bosa is fine, and I'm sure he's going to get drafted here, have a few picks or so. But I just think that Ed Oliver is, like, the best defensive player on the board. And the 49ers, they have a need on the defensive line. They could add him to the mix. They had, like, a pretty bad pass rush last year. So I think that Ed Oliver can help with that. And come on out here to the Bay, and let me welcome you as a fellow Houstonian.
So you're insane. It should be Nick Bosa, but I love Ed Oliver, and I get it. Well, and by the way, so the Niners, there is some complexity there in terms of their defensive line, and they've been trying to draft there for years. And out of the guys they've taken, DeForest Buckner is a star to me, right? On the inside there. And my feeling going into free agency was they really needed an outside pass rusher, but they did sign Dee Ford. So it's not beyond the pale that they would take another interior guy, especially one as talented as Ed Oliver. I would take Nick Bosa there personally, but it's not crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, too, with Ed Oliver is that he's versatile. I mean, I've seen some mock drafts and some, like, draft breakdowns that say, well, hey, if it doesn't work out, maybe he can move to inside linebacker or whatever. And I'm just like, well, I mean, if he can potentially do that, then, like, why can't he play at all the positions along the defensive line?
All right. So I'm Mike McCanny. I'm in the Jets draft room, and I just saw the Niners took Ed Oliver, and I'm crying tears of joy, and we're high-fiving because we get Nick Bosa, you maniac.
Oh,
so we spent a lot of time talking about Nick Bosa on this podcast and how – unfortunately, his best comp is his brother, and it feels lazy, but it's true. I guess Joey's a little bit more athletic, perhaps. He's a little bit bigger, right? But Nick, I think, is faster and, you know, high floor guy, plug and play, has all the moves, and the Jets need a pass rusher. So we are delighted in the Meadowlands or wherever.
High floor, low ceiling. I mean, here's the thing. If his name was Nick Jackson or Nick Johnson, or Nick Belisari, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that he would be regarded this highly. I think he would still be considered a top 10 pick. I'm not trying to offend him. Yeah, I'm not as impressed with Nick Bosa as everybody else. I allow that I could be wrong on this, but I feel like if he had a different last name, then we wouldn't be like, oh, well, he's definitely going over Ed Oliver. He should go over Ed Oliver, which is why as the GM of the 49ers, I took him first.
Let's move on, because we've talked a lot about Nick Bosa. I want to get to the guys we haven't talked about. Who should the Raiders take at four?
Well, man, why wouldn't they take Josh Allen? I mean, so you got Mike Mayock, you know, putting his imprint on the draft here, taking a guy like Josh Allen, the good Josh Allen, or as I like to call him, the black Josh Allen. He's, you know, got everything. I know that you love him.
I do love him.
He does everything. He can drop in the coverage. He's good at pass rush. He's holds up pretty well with the run. He ran a 4.63 at like 6.4, 260. I mean, you know, he benched, pressed 225 28 times. He's just a great athlete. The production is there. The pedigree is there, you know, being the top defender in the SEC. The Raiders should feel lucky that he was available to them at number four.
He is a delight. Okay. And to me, Josh Allen, you talked a little about Nick Bosa, and you said high floor, potentially low ceiling. That's your words, not mine. Josh Allen, the ceiling is Mars to me. I mean, the question to me is, how is he going to be used? What system? Because that will go a long way in determining what his NFL career looks like. Because you're right, he's a guy who can do so many things. Like, if he's drafted by a team, you know, with a 4-3 who just wants him to use him as a pure defensive end pass rusher, he can do that, right? But he can also, I think last week we talked about how he could play every position. You could also really see him in a 3-4 because his coverage skills are phenomenal. His run defense is like a little iffy. I think it's gotten better as he's learned how to play the position, but he's a late bloomer. I think he played wide receiver in high school, right? So to go back to the ceiling thing, like, he's so much to learn in terms of moves, and his upside to me is through the roof, and I love it. Obviously, the Raiders, they need a pass rusher, so that makes sense.
I mean, their pass rush last year was historically terrible. I mean, they finished last in the league in sacks and they have 13. And the Giants, who were second to last in sacks, had 30. Josh Allen, like, if you want to make up for that loss, that huge gaping loss of Khalil Mack, like, Josh Allen is a good place to start.
So I am the GM of the Bucks. I'm delighted to still have a job. It's a miracle. And I'm also delighted because the best player available is Quinnen Williams right here. And like, we've talked about him also on this podcast. Ebby, he's just awesome. But I don't want to use the word plug and play. I'll stop using the word plug and play because the rest of the guys aren't really plug and play.
He's like the most. I like that phrase, actually. It's one of the cliches.
It just works, right? He literally is a plug and play guy, right? Like, he is an NFL player already to me. The Bucks are interesting, Joel, because they invested a lot in their defensive line last year. You remember they added JPP, Bo Allen, Vinnie Curry. They drafted Vita Vea, but they still had a terrible, I mean, there were injuries all year in that defense, but they were a horrible run defense, very little pass rush. They brought in Todd Bowles, so there's going to be some changes on the defensive line. My feeling is just if for a rebuilding team, well, they probably don't think of themselves as a rebuilding team, but a team that has as many holes as they do, has struggled as much as they did on defense, you take the best guy available. And we've talked about Quinnen and how good he is and how polished he already is. So I just think that's a no-brainer there.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they get really lucky because in any other year, Quinnen Williams could be the number one pick, right? He could be the number two pick, depending on where it is. So a quick aside here, because I think I mentioned this to you the other day, that I think Quinnen Williams' agent unfollowed me on Twitter maybe about a month ago because I made a comment about him, and I'd just like to explain it because I wasn't offending him. I just said he doesn't look like he has the face of a star. Okay, like, he doesn't have a face. Like, he doesn't look. You look at him in the face, and this doesn't read like big, intimidating NFL player. He doesn't look. When I was growing up, we used to call big dudes that just kind of look, whatever. We called them fadoop fadoops. And Quinnen Williams kind of has like a fadoop fadoop face, and it doesn't mean that he's not going to be great, and that he's not awesome, and the Bucks should be really happy. And so I said that, and then I realized that she wasn't following me, and I don't know. Those two things are connected, but I would like to apologize, even though I stand by the fact that he has a fadoop-fadoop face.
So he has a very sweet kind of teddy bear face. It would be the term I'd use. Yeah. And it doesn't help that in the first picture I pulled up, he has braces. That really throws me off. But you know who he reminds me of? Calais Campbell has a face like that, Joel.
That's
Calais Campbell,
Yeah, right. I mean, he wasn't immediately diagnosed, but he came into his own the way that he got into his career, right? And that can happen to Quinnen Williams. Quinnen Williams is young, too. I think Williams is 21 years old, maybe. Just turned 21. So, yeah, maybe he's still growing into his faith, but it just seems very young.
You've got the next pick, Gettleman.
I do. I'm David Gettleman, and people have tried to trade, a sandwich and a bag of donuts and, turned all that down. And I know that people think that I should take Dwayne Haskins here, right? Like, I've seen a lot of mock drafts that say, hey, well, Eli Manning has a terrible arm and he's scared now and he's old and terrible and he's worse than Cooper Manning. But I guess the issue is, like, are we rebuilding or not? I think they are, but I also don't think that Haskins is the dude you want to build around quite yet. So I'm going to take Montez Sweat at the number six pick. Like, when the Giants have been great, they've had great pass rush. They've had, these great defensive ends, JPP, Strahan, Justin Tuck. They've had, like, these great defensive lines in the past. And I think that this is sort of in keeping with that tradition, even though that's sort of dumb. But I still think that, like, when the Giants are great, they have great defensive linemen. And I just, he's got, like, all the tools. Like, you're talking about a 6'6", 265-pound guy who ran a 4.4 flat. And, I mean, like, that's absurd. But that, I mean, it's, like, hard to – like, I can't even believe they're making football players like that now. You know what I mean? Like, that didn't even seem possible. It didn't seem real. And so I'm just like, why not try this guy? Why not try, this really athletic, high-ceiling, low-floor guy like Montez Sweat?
I agree with your characterization of him. He, to me, is sort of the beginning of that tier below Alan Bosa. The guys, you know, like, there's, to me, a very clear top tier that we've gone through, mm-hmm. really all of them. And then now you're getting into the Montez Sweat, Brian Burke. I think Montez Sweat is definitely the best, next best pass rusher available. And he shredded the combine. You alluded to that. But he's not just a workout dude. His production at Mississippi State was good enough so that you shouldn't feel worried that you're just taking a raw athlete. Like, I think he could still work on some of his moves, but I agree he has a very high ceiling. And the Giants have just so many needs, it's kind of hard to know where to begin. And I like the idea of not taking a quarterback. I mean, this is a much bigger discussion. When do you take the quarterback? It's not just about, like, do you like the quarterback? And I realize I'm kind of undermining what I said earlier about taking Kyler if you love him. But you don't want a quarterback walking into this situation in New York. And obviously, if they really love Haskins, he probably wouldn't start. But to me, like, this is undeniably a rebuilding team that's going to be very, very bad next year. So taking the best guy available makes a lot of sense. So Jaguars are not a rebuilding team, at least not, they don't view themselves that way. I don't view them that way. You know, they paid a ton for Foles this year. There's some holes on defense after guys have left. They could really use a good pass catcher, a few pass catchers for Foles. But given where they're picking and given who's available and given their issues up front, I'm going to go offensive line and take Jonah Williams. And I'm not going to use the word plug and play again, but he's the most pro-ready of the offensive linemen. Really the only true negative I've seen is the size thing, the length of his arms. Yeah. He's got, I guess, T-Rex arms, which is, they're like a half an inch shorter than the prototype or something stupid like that. His arms are under 34 inches. So are Joe Thomas's arms. So are Joe Staley's arms. Like, they, you know, get out. I just don't watch the tape. He's just, of the various tackles, and this is not a great tackle draft, he already looks like a veteran to me, both in pass pro and his run blocking is incredible. He really lays dudes out. So I think he's a day one starter.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about, you know, Alabama turns out a lot of, obviously they turn out a lot of draft prospects every year. One thing that gets overlooked is, like, they tend to turn out pretty solid offensive line prospects. You know, they haven't really had a bust at that position yet. Cam Robinson's been okay. Andre Smith, despite people making fun of him for running shirtless at his workout, ended up being a pretty good NFL lineman. So I just think that, like, given that pedigree, given Jacksonville's need, I think this is a smart play right here.
All right. Yeah. The Lions, well, I'm curious to see, where would you go first?
I mean, they've got a lot of needs because the Lions always have a lot of needs. But I'm going to go with Devin White, the linebacker out of LSU, who we last saw crying at the NFL Combine because he ran a 4.42. He's amazing. He's a great athlete. I saw him play a lot this year. He's got a lot of pop. He's very, really violent. And the thing about him that Matt Patricia probably would like is that he's still learning the position. He was a running back coming out of high school. Shout out to North Webster Parish in northern Louisiana. He was a running back coming out of high school, so he's only played linebacker for a few years. He's got a lot more growth to go in his game, but you've got, like, this physical specimen who is violent, has fairly decent instincts. He's still, but those are the sort of things you got to learn with reps, right? And so I think he's a pretty good, if on that turf, in Detroit, playing for that coach, this just seems like a good fit for Detroit right now.
So the Devins, Devin White and Devin Bush, I have been hearing it's been all across the board as to who will go first. I, too, have a slight preference for Devin White. It might just be the horse thing, but I love the way he, I think they're both really good and also really modern, you know, like, it's sort of like the Roquan Smith pick last year with Chicago. Like, to have a linebacker who can keep up with running backs, who can drop into coverage, who can fly across the field, who can sniff out play action is so valuable in today's NFL. And White, to me, the Lions defense has a ways to go, and he's a guy you build around. I do love that pick. Okay, so Buffalo's next, and this is an interesting one, because I praised their free agency earlier. I liked what they did. I was thinking about taking an offensive lineman here, which was a huge issue last year, but they did add on the offensive line. We talked about that during free agency. They added John Brown, Cole Beasley, some pass catchers for Josh Allen. I still think they need to bolster that area, but I am going to go edge rusher. I am going to go, and this might be a little rich for some people's blood. I'm going to go Brian Burns here.
Oh, my God.
Too rich for you?
I'm sure he's a fine young man, but 235 pounds, man. But, so, you know, hey, yes.
He's little.
You know, yeah.
He's little. So for those who don't know him.
Who's the last guy that's beat that? Who's the last guy that's been successful at that size, rushing the passer, at that size?
How is he bigger than Leonard Floyd or smaller than Leonard Floyd? Let's see. Not that Leonard Floyd's been this great success, but.
Yeah.
So Brian Burns, yeah, he is very small, and that's going to be the wrap on him. He's a pass rusher out of FSU, and he put up excellent numbers at the combine, but he didn't play like his size to me, if that makes sense. I realize his frame he's got to bulk up, but he wins in all positions. He wins inside, outside. He plays with so much explosion and power. He's not just, I know he's going to be labeled as just a speed guy, and I really don't think he's just a speed guy. And I really think, you know, he could still add some moves to his repertoire, but I really think he has a much higher ceiling than any of the other edge rushers left.
I can see that. And, you know, they've got a guy who's sort of not quite that model because Jerry Hughes was built differently, but like he's not, you know, the typical, you know, 6'5", 265 pound defensive end that you'd want in that position. And they've managed to have some success with him. So I could see them looking at Brian Burns and being like, oh, we can make this work. And he's fast. He's got tools and he's got production. We can make this work.
All right. Who's Denver taking?
So I'm John Elway here. I would love to take a quarterback. I mean, that's just, you know, that's what I just like to compile quarterbacks. But man, I've got Joe Flacco now. We're set. You know, we're set. I mean, he's just, his best football is ahead of him, apparently. So I got to give him somebody to throw to. And I'm going to probably take T.J. Hawkinson. Well, not probably. I'm going to say T.J. Hawkinson. We're going to welcome to Denver in Mountain Time Zone. So, yeah. You know, the Hawkins actually have a pretty good record of producing NFL tight ends. You know, Dallas Clark, and I mean, you know, San Francisco just got George Kittle. You know, they've got a pretty good record of producing tight ends here. They got two of them this year. He's Noah Fant. We might hear his name later in this mock draft. And so, yeah. And he's a crazy athlete, man. Like, he, like, vertical jump 37 and a half.
Yeah,
he's a dude. So, yeah, like, you know, I could see Flacco, you know, getting really attached to T.J. Hawkinson.
Flacco loves his tight ends. So with the caveat that if Drew Lock is available at 10, somebody's going to have to throw a body in front of John Elway to stop him from picking him, I think. I love this pick. I mean, T.J. Hawkinson is phenomenal. He does it all. That's just my takeaway. It's the dumbest note, but he can already do everything you want a tight end to do. I mean, he's not like a perfect route runner yet, but he's got pretty soft hands. Catch radius is there. I'm sure he played basketball. I'm just going to say that without even looking it up. He played basketball.
It
feels right. TJ, you know, dude can block. I mean, honestly, like, I'm not going to do a Gronk comp because that's insane. In the same way that Aaron Donald comps are forbidden on this podcast, Gronk comps are forbidden. But his upside as a blocker, I think, is Gronk, I think Gronk is the best blocking tight end in NFL history. So it's crazy. The tight ends in this draft are better than the receivers. We'll see how many receivers, if any, go in the first round. But I'm with you. I'm with you on Hawk. All right. I'm going to move quickly to this one because I think you're going to, have some feelings about it. So I'm the Bengals, a very rebuilding team.
Apologies.
Pretty sad place. I'm going to take Dwayne Haskins here. I'm going to do it.
Oh, my God.
It's time. I like him, dude. God. First of all, let's talk about quarterback. They need to take a quarterback, I think. And they could wait until next year. It's going to get pretty competitive. I agree. It's a better class. The more I watch of Dwayne Haskins, who I didn't love in college, the more I like about him. Warren Sharp, friend of the show, put up statistics for the top four quarterbacks against good defenses, the best pass defenses, and the worst. And the delta for Locke and Jones was enormous versus how they played very poorly against good pass defenses. Dwayne's was not, okay? Neither was Kyler, by the way, but, you know, Kyler plays in Tecmo Bowl or whatever. But, Dwayne, like, I know, like, you don't want to just watch the Michigan game, and obviously he was incredible in the Michigan game, but rewatching that, I was just blown away by how comfortable he was moving around in the pocket, negating his feel for pressure, his ability to go through his reads. Now, like, it's not the most complicated offense, Ohio State, right? But he executed it really well, and I just think he is and again, we have a small sample size with him, but to me, he is a prototypical, you know, pocket passer. You can build around. I think that's kind of what the Bengals want to do.
First of all, you know, we must pay respect to Andy Dalton. I'm a TCU alum. I hate that you want to move on from him already like this, but I understand it.
Already?
I mean, I just, you know, it just seems like, you know, he has a little some more football in him, but that's fine. Dwayne, yeah, I mean, he had a great season. I mean, the thing, I don't know what I'm holding against him. And maybe it's because it may be the same thing like with Kyler Murray. Like, we only saw it in a year. We never, you know, defenses didn't get a second crack at them in college, right? Mm. And so maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's sort of like my skepticism about him, because the numbers are ridiculous. And he was surrounded by talent, but he also made them better. He made them better from JT Barrett. Like, when he took over for JT Barrett, yes. And JT Barrett was a great college quarterback, they still looked better under Dwayne Haskins. So he's like, he's a difference maker. He was a difference maker at college. I'm just a little bit skeptical, but I mean, at this point in the draft for the second quarterback prospect, this was pretty good value. And yeah, like, why not? Also, the dude looks like Meek Mill in the face. Speaking of faces, he looks
I really like your facial analysis. We need to bring you on the draft show like a hologram of you, like the Tupac election hologram, to pop up and analyze who's got the best face in the first round.
Oh man, well, it depends really on what you're looking for, right? Like, are we just talking about like the guy that looks like a football player, or are we talking about a guy like just a handsome dude? It looks like people would be around it. Because Montez Sweat is a good-looking guy, right? I look at him and I'm like, oh, he would have been in a 90s R&B video, okay? but if you're looking for somebody that, like, looks intimidating, and this is sort of counterintuitive. I don't know if people will agree with this, but the whole package is Ed Oliver. He looks like overgrown Mike Tyson. Not like look like, like he looks exactly like Mike Tyson, but like his frame, the way his body is built, he just looks like a huge, like a heavyweight boxer. And so when I look at Oliver, I see Mike Tyson. Not like in terms of, like I said, it's not a perfect comparison in terms of face, but just like his overall vibe. But, you know, best looking dude. I mean, I think I go with Montez Sweat. We already know what I think about Quentin Williams.
Who is Green Bay taking at 12?
The second Devin. Let's look at the second Devin that plays linebacker off the board. Devin Bush. Yeah, Devin 2. Sort of undersized, you know, 5'11", 234, but he was at the center of that defense in Michigan, which was great, until they played Ohio State. I'm sure people will probably use some of that film to knock him, right? And to knock that defense as a whole, but I think Devin, but he tested well. He was productive for all the years he was there. He's got pedigree. His dad played in the NFL, and Green Bay needs help at that position. Now, if this was any other year, and there were, like, receivers and tight ends that I thought were worth helping Aaron Rodgers out, I would prefer to do something like that because I think Aaron Rodgers needs a lot of help. I just don't see that here, and not for value, so that's why I'm going with Devin, too.
I like him. I like going defense, although, you know, I do think the Packers have needs, a wide receiver, potentially tight end, and maybe we'll get to those needs later. But in terms of positional value, like we've talked about, you know, the wide receivers are not really up here. And they did add Preston Smith, but they've got guys in contract years at the linebacker position. Blake Martinez, he's been solid. And then, you know, Kyle Fackrell kind of broke out last year. Kyle Sackrell, they started calling him. Caught on.
Another Kyler.
Took over the nation. Wow. Kyler Sackrell.
Yeah.
Fackrell.
The first Kyle.
Kyler Fackrell, sorry. But yeah, I like Devin. I like him a lot. I think, again, to go back to the reasons why I like the other Devin, he just shares a lot of those characteristics in terms of speed and coverage ability, and it makes a lot of sense for me. All right, I'm the next team. I'm Miami. Yeah. Miami's team needs are everything. Fortunately, Miami is not delusional. I am really excited for you to get angry about this pick. Miami is not delusional about what they are. They are fully aware that they are a rebuilding team. At least I really want them to be fully aware that they're a rebuilding team. It seems like they're fully aware. Their behavior indicates to me that they're aware of their rebuilding nature. So there's not going to be any quarterback nonsense for Miami. Right. So I think they should take a defensive player who they can build around, a centerpiece, a leader. I'm going to go Christian Wilkins here.
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, man. I could see the fans in South Beach and, you know, Kendall and wherever else all the people live. I mean, I'm sure they'll get really excited about a defensive tackle. Good job. I'm excited for you to tell the Miami fan base like Christian Wilkins. He's fine. He's a first-round defensive lineman.
Ceiling, again, is the question for me, athleticism. Right. But he is an NFL player, and I'm not going to fight with you. Who are you taking at 14?
I am going to take another Clemson defensive lineman who I'm not that excited about, but whatever. We got to fill these slots.
Clemson.
Farrell. Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. They won the national championship and they like destroyed Alabama, and I'm not excited about. What was the best defensive line in college football history? One of them, anyway. But yeah, Cleveland Farrell. They need help at edge rusher. I mean, Vic Beasley didn't do great last year, and Tyke McKinley still hasn't quite come on yet. You'd think Dan Quinn would want somebody here to shore up that pass rush. And Cleveland Farrell, good size, productive, national champion, played in a system where, they produce NFL defensive linemen. So it isn't the wrong pick. I'm just not excited about it. But that's fine.
It's another one where I think I worry so much when I talk about the Clemson guys that I'm just lumping them together and saying, like, they're very pro-ready, but athleticism, I don't know. Like, they're not that exciting. And I worry that it's because – we talked about this last week, that there's, like, a Warriors thing going on where because they play it all together, they're kind of getting lumped together. Yeah. That really is true with him, what I said earlier about kind of the athleticism being the question mark, because the technique is there, the hands are there, the footwork is there, the run defense is there. And Atlanta does have a need at that position. So I'm going to take a guy next for Washington who's kind of the opposite in some ways, in my opinion, of that. I don't which I think is fair. And that's another pass rusher. I'm going to take Rashawn Gary here, who is just pure athleticism. And you saw his combine numbers are bonkers, but just didn't have the production at Michigan. And so there's a big question mark there. The Washington needs a pass rusher. A lot of teams need pass rushers, which has worked out well with this draft. But the ceiling is very high there. He's so, so strong, so explosive. The question is just whether that can translate into solid NFL play.
He's another one of those guys that I'm always sort of skeptical on dudes who haven't quite done it, but they're like, oh, he's going to put it all together. And I'm like, yo, dude, he's going to have to put it together in the NFL. where everybody is like, that, right? And the only time I can remember somebody in that position ever doing it where they're just like, well, he's got all the tools. He didn't produce that well. And he, ended up becoming, something close to us. I was like, Don Terry Poe. It turned out. But most of those guys, they never become that guy. And so that's why I'm sort of skeptical. But I do agree with you that, why not? Like, he could be that guy. He could become Hercules. You know what I mean? Like, he's got all the tools. He looks like he should be in the NFL. So, why not?
So before we get to the second half of the first round, I want to take a second and remind you guys about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there is one place you can go where it's simple, fast, smart, place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. If you post a job there, it'll send it to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but it doesn't stop there. It has powerful matching technology that ZipRecruiter uses to scan thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Basically, you're just going to save a ton of time using this. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 or 5 employers who post on it get a quality candidate through the site within 1 day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. You are, who's next? The Carolina Panthers? Okay, so what's the position you're looking to fill on your team using ZipRecruiter.com?
Yeah, right now we've got this medium-sized company based in Charlotte, just typical banking industry, but we need somebody with a little more beef this time, somebody that can, we're looking for somebody that can give our corporation a new look, and also to help one of our more important employees, you may have heard of him, Cam Newton. So I'm thinking that we're going to reach down, like so many other people from the South that moved to Charlotte. I want to reach down into Gainesville and get Juwan Taylor, offensive tackle out of the University of Florida. He's got a lot of potential. Like, there's a lot of growth still in him. He's, he's got some technique to work on, right? Like, he's not perfect. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of growth. But, like, I feel like with offensive linemen, that's okay. That's a craft that they'll learn. All positions I don't feel that way about. But with the offensive line, I feel like he can learn that in the NFL. He's got the right size. He's got all the tools. He just needs to put that together. And I think Cam could use somebody that can protect him, given how the last few years have gone for him.
Yeah, I mean, he has it all, right? Like, athletic measurements there. And in Florida, he faced, like, serious competition, real pass, right? Kind of like Jonah, so he's battle-tested. Yeah. Sometimes there's footwork issues, hand placement, pad-level stuff like that. But he, to me, can start day one, probably. At 17, we're back to New York, so we took Sweat. I'm still not going to go quarterback, even though there's rumors that they're going to take Daniel Jones here. But I'm Gettleman now, and I have incepted my brain into his, and I am going to stop him from doing that. Like I said earlier, a lot of holes on the defense. They could have used Juwan Taylor, frankly, a wide receiver, but I'm going to go cornerback, which is another area of need for them. Obviously the Jenkins contract has not been great and will come to an end at some point, and the position opposite him should be open too. I'm going to take Byron Murphy out of Washington.
I know you follow them. I mean, they turn out a lot of cornerback prospects every year, and I'm just like, which one of them has like really hit in the NFL yet so far? But hey, Byron Murphy, man, give him a shot.
You know, he is 5'11", 190 pounds, mm-hmm. not a freak, but he can play the position. I mean, I just, this might be my Huskies bias. And like, there's about three cornerbacks who could potentially all go in the first two rounds, I think. Mm-hmm. I just think he already has the ability to cover in the NFL. I don't know. Like, it's not about size. His speed is fine. It's fine. But it's more about his technique and his ball skills for me. I just think he's not going to get burnt. He's not going to embarrass you. And I think, his upside is, I don't want to say like Pro Bowl NFL corner, but it's definitely long multi-year starter for me. So I'm going to take Byron. I'm not apologizing for that. Okay, who's Minnesota taking?
All right, so I'm with the Minnesota Vikings now, and we're at the 18th pick. So somebody's got to open things up for Kirk Cousins and Dalvin Cook, right? Like, they need a little bit of help on the offensive line to sort of send there.
Question.
And so I'm going to take Cody Ford out of Oklahoma, this big, unformed mass of human who we can just shape into a potential Pro Bowler someday, maybe, right? Like, he's really raw, got a lot of, athletic traits that NFL teams love. But, like, with offensive linemen, you can do that. You can mold them into something. The Vikings have a need here. Pretty decent value, too. So, yeah.
Yes. If the Vikings don't go offensive line, the fan base will probably revolt. Whatever revolting looks like in Minnesota, they will do that.
Revolt.
Leaving some slightly angry comments. But – Yeah, I love Cordy Ford, and so that's why I said yes under my breath, weirdly. But okay. My only question for him is, you know, are you going to play him at tackle or move him inside? And so it'll be, depend on the team that takes him, I guess.
Yeah.
I think he can do both, personally. He's not like a mauler, like a true bully, but he definitely has the size and athleticism, despite his size, I think, to block on the inside. He can pass pro. I think he could play right tackle in the NFL as well. They gotta go O-line, so that's no question to me. All right, I'm the Titans also have like a shocking amount of needs when I was looking at their roster.
Looks and... like they need to tighten up.
Wow. Wow.
You're
never
coming
back on this podcast. You're never coming back.
I'm sorry.
We love tighten up around here. No, we love tighten up, so I appreciate it. Well, they can tighten up at the Titan end. No, that didn't work. Well, I'm just going to give them a tight end. I don't care. Ooh. So they've had some bad luck taking receivers. You know, some of their picks haven't really panned out. And they could certainly – they've had some losses on defense, especially in that front seven. I feel like they could go there too. But I really like the idea of taking Noah Fant here, who's the second Iowa tight end. And it's a little bit high for him, possibly, but he, to me, has more upside than most of the receiver prospects. Yeah. And Titans could use, I mean, Delanie Walker's like, you know, 82 now. No, we love Delanie. He's so good. But he was hurt. You know, they really, I think if this is their whole, like, we're going to see what Mariota can do season, you know, if they got to make a decision on him. I just think having a guy like Fant, who is not as all-around as Hockenson, and I think people are concerned because Hockenson ended up taking a lot of his reps last year, or taking a lot of his catches, actually, targets, rather. I think still his upside, his vertical ability, he can run all the routes, his catch radius, then I guess he played basketball too, make him a worthy first round pick.
Oh yeah, I mean he's got like all the athleticism and tools that, I mean he's probably, I mean, you know, Hockenson's a freak, but Fant might be more of a physical freak than
I think his
he
athletic
is.
Upside is greater. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, I mean, and the Titans need to loosen things up actually a little bit, like to give. Open the field up a little bit for Mariota, so I could see him like stretching the field down the middle of the field. So yeah, like I mean, yeah, like you said, people need to figure out what's going on with Marcus Mariota. This kind of could help get some sense for like, okay, what does he do when we give him like a dynamic weapon?
All right, who's Pittsburgh taking?
So I don't want to be greedy, but I'm going to take. Yeah, that was terrible. I tried something and it didn't work. I'm going to say Greedy Williams. I mean, really, the Steelers need a colonic aside. Like, they need to really just clean out everything. But
defense.
Let's try. Let's get Greedy Williams. Their pass coverage was a mess last year. And, you know, Hayden's going to his last year. He's on the wrong side of 30. Artie Burns is not dependable. Greedy Williams is long. He's 6'2". He's fairly fluid, which is, you know, you wouldn't expect it for a corner of that size. You know, you'd think they'd be a little bit more stiff, but Greedy, like, has good fluidity in his hips, which is a weird thing to say, but that's what we know about him. So, yeah, I think he's a good fit here, and especially pretty good value, too. I know we always talk about value, but, like, sometimes it's not just who you get, it's where you get them. And Greedy Williams was a dude that a lot of people early in the year had somewhere around that top 10 thing. So to get him at 20, I think it's a pretty good thing. So,
Yeah, there are people who have him mocked above Byron. To me, he's more boom or bust, right? Like, Byron is the safer pick at cornerback.
Right.
But you're right, this is absolutely an area of need for them. I mean, Artie Burns, they had, like, benched, I remember, last year. The whole secondary, like, I kind of was eyeballing Jonathan Abram here, but I don't mind Greedy either. Like, I think that whole secondary is where I would go first in Pittsburgh, but I like the pick. So the Seahawks are next. My beloved Seahawks.
You don't have any
Seahawks
emotions in this, tied up in this. Yeah.
Yeah. Do not look Mina Kimes, reaction to the Penny pick last year. But the reality is they're definitely going to trade down because they have like four draft picks next year. And they love to John. There is nothing John Schneider loves more in this world than trading down. But I'm going to let them pick someone. Trade down is lame for a mock draft. So there's a few ways. I mean, obviously, offensive line is always in need. And Andre Dillard is tempting. Not clear. You know, they've got the left side locked down with Dwayne Brown. It's not clear what's going to happen with Jermaine Ifedi. They could also go guard. Tight end is something being thrown around. We don't know what the deal is with Will Disley, who was their tight end pick last year. But I'm going to go cornerback again here. And
run a quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know what that means?
Oh! Dang.
I'm going to take Rock Ya-Sin out of Temple. He was kind of a late bloomer. I think he transferred.
I mean, you have to be a late bloomer to end up at Temple, so, I mean, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, you're a late bloomer if you end up at Temple.
The only cornerback in the nation targeted 50 or more times who did not allow a reception of 20-plus yards is my Rock Ya-Sin fact. 5'11", 192. So, you know, the Seahawks historically have taken taller backs and maybe gone more for athleticism, but I don't know. I think Shaq Griffin was really up and down last year. The other side, I think, should be open to competition, so I'll go him. All right, Baltimore, 22.
My whole case for this next draft pick is like, have you seen this dude shirtless? And so I'm taking DK Metcalf, wide receiver out of Ole Miss. That dude's clanging and banging. You know what I mean? He's just like, you know, I mean, he is the dude in the weight room with his, you know, jug of water and, you know, his creatine pellets and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is that, okay, so you decided Lamar Jackson is your quarterback. And people are divided on the future of Lamar Jackson. But the thing about him is that you need to give him some receiving options. They don't have a very good receiving core in Baltimore. And the dude can run block. You know what I mean? I mean, like, DK Metcalf, he's a good run block. He's a good run back and wide receiver. So at the least, you got somebody out there that you got him covered. You know, he's blocking his dude. So, I think DK Metcalf is another one of those boom or bust type guys. His production doesn't match what his workouts tell us, but good value. Why not? Let's parade him around Baltimore without a shirt and get fans excited about Ravens football again.
So the wrap on DK is the production wasn't there. He was injured. Yeah. The receiver at Ole Miss who actually had the production, A.J. Brown, it is funny that, I don't know, he did so much more than DK and is probably going to get drafted after. But and I think the other question is, you know, can he run? Like, what does his route tree look like? At the combine, he tested off the charts on all, like, just about everything except for moving laterally. You know, he can run go routes. His tree is very vertical, which is good for Lamar Jackson, by the way. I think that's his sweet spot. He really can't throw outs, and it's good
We're
news because DK Metcalf can't
here,
run
right?
out. I'm just going to, like, skip really quickly through my next one because it's Houston, and much like Minnesota, they unquestionably need offensive line. Their tackle situation is dismal. So I'm going to take Andre Dillard out of Washington State, who's just I'm not going to use plug and play. I'm not going to use pro ready. He will give them competent tackle play, and that is a massive upgrade for Houston. Oakland's a fun one. Yeah. Okay, so just to recap with the Raiders, we've already taken Josh Allen, and then this is the second Raiders pick.
This is, again, the construct of this draft just frustrates me because my heart wants Marquise Brown to play with his cousin, Antonio. But they need a running back. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Marshawn and Dunbarton. I'm typically not a running back guy in the first round because I just think you can find these dudes anywhere, let alone this guy. But the best running back prospect in the draft is Josh Jacobs, and welcome to the Bay Area, my friend. For a year, before you go to Las Vegas.
He's the most complete running back in this draft. It seems like, unlike some of the other positions, he's pretty consensus, number one. He can run routes. He can block all right, I think. Maybe not.
Why do people fall for Alabama running backs? Like, who's been the best Alabama running back in the NFL? Mark Ingram,
well,
I guess? Maybe?
You know what I like? Yeah, Sean Alexander.
Okay. That's the pre-Saban era. Okay, but yeah. Right. We've got.
Listen, you're not going to fool me with. I'm not going to get fooled by Damian Harris, but who's very much that brand of like Alabama back, who's going to be really like not great. I think in the NFL, just kind of boring.
Solid.
The knock on Jacobs is he didn't have a ton of explosive long gains, but and that maybe he didn't have a ton of experience. You know, they ran a timeshare. I think it's great that he didn't have a lot of experience. No tread on the tires and. There's a little bit of recency bias, I think, at play here, right? Because we all saw how awesome he was at the end of the season. But the Raiders, the way they're building, the amount of picks they have, it's not crazy for them to go running back there. So I got the Eagles next. Secondary is a big issue for them. Free safety is really more of a need than strong safety, although Malcolm Jenkins is getting up in the years. But I'm just going to go best safety available and take Jonathan Abram here.
Oh, he's good. He's great.
They don't have a lot of needs, by the way. Doing these team needs for the Eagles, realistically, they might need a cornerback more than a safety. But I just think, you know, Jenkins, they're going to need a successor to him, and I think he's much better than the remaining cornerbacks. So I'm going to go Jonathan Abram there. Who are the Colts taking?
Abram. So we'll talk about one of his teammates actually right here, Jeffrey Simmons.
Mississippi State.
I'm thinking, Mississippi State, thinking about taking Jeffrey Simmons right here for the Colts. There's a lot wrong right here, right? He may not be able to play next year because he had a knee injury while working out for the combine that he was not invited to because of the incident where he was caught hitting a woman on video when he was a high school senior. So there's a lot, you know, the NFL teams are sort of taking in here. But if you look at the NFL.com's rankings of the draft prospects, they have Jeffrey Simmons at number two. That's, you know, what people think about him and his talent. And so if he can get back and, you know, it's not a career-ending knee injury, and the Colts can use a little bit of help on the defensive line. I mean, it's not bad, but, you know, one more guy to go with Justin Houston, who they just signed, DeNico Autry, Marcus Hunt, you know, one more guy, they can have, like, a really formidable defensive line. And so, yeah, like I think they can afford to wait on Jeffrey Simmons, and this is great value for them.
Before we get to the next pick, because I know you have been working on a story on Simmons, which is probably going to come out soon, and so you know a lot about him. The incident, which is not domestic violence, by the way. It was not intimate partner violence. It was a stranger. You know, how is he talking about that now? Like, where is he in terms of how he's reckoned with what he did? And the video is truly horrifying if you've never seen it.
Well, yeah, so it's complicated, right? I think the thing is that he has expressed contrition for it and kept his nose clean and stayed out of trouble ever since. And I guess the issue is, like, do you think he's the kind of person that this would ever happen again? And that's sort of what we're trying to figure out. I don't know. I mean, it would be a fool's errand for me to try to predict, you know, what's going to happen to Jeff Simmons in the future. But I mean, he has expressed contrition for it. The thing is, though, is that it's always with they were attacking my mom and sister, and that's why I intervened. And so I guess as an NFL personnel person, you have to decide, is that good enough for what we saw on camera? Like the fact that somebody was attacking your mom and your sister, you know, that you intervened in that way.
Right, exactly. You're one of the strongest men, like, in the 4-state radius.
Yeah, but you're the strongest man in Macon, Mississippi. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're, like, you're 6'5", 275, and you're seen on video punching a woman on the ground. Like, is that...
What is that? Yeah. It's interesting. There just aren't a lot of... he's really the only, I think... I could be missing something, but in terms of prospects with these sorts of red flags or, you know, these stories in their past, he really is sort of the Joe Mixon, you know, of this draft. So it's something we'll hear about more, and I'm looking forward to reading your story about it. So I've got the Raiders again at 27, and we have taken Montez Sweat. We took Josh Jacobs. They have a lot of needs on defense. Otherwise, I'm going to go cornerback here, and this might be a little bit earlier than people would want, but I'm going to take DeAndre Baker out of Georgia, who's a guy where his tape looks a lot better than his athletic numbers, his testing, which was not great. Like, it's the size and speed and, you know, the 40. He's average, but he doesn't play average. He's one of those guys where I think his game speed looks a lot faster than his straight line speed.
Yeah, I mean, he's solid, right? And he played for a defensive guy, excelled in that system. He played against a lot of these, you know, SEC receivers that, you know, are coming up at this point in the draft, and he did fairly well against them. So it makes sense. Like, it's not like he's a subpar athlete. He's just not, you know, an elite one. And I guess, can you be okay with that? And evidently you are, as the GM.
All right, well, who are the Chargers taking at 28?
Yeah, so I kind of went back and forth on this about whether or not they should add to some defensive line depth. At the last minute, I decided, you know what, A.J. Brown's still on the board.
Yes.
DK Metcalf, college teammate. He looks good without a shirt, too. He's in some of those pictures. He was the more productive receiver. And, man, you know, Phillip Rivers could use a little bit more help. It's sort of like a gift to your quarterback. Like, hey, man, look, we're going to show you some appreciation. I know we could take a boring old defensive tackle, but let's give you just another little weapon here to help you.
I love A.J. Brown. He's my number one receiver. By the way, the wide receiver boards for this draft are in just totally all over the place, right? Like, there are people who love Hakeem Butler. There are people who hate Hakeem Butler. DK Metcalf is number one on some boards. He's like 10 on, you know, it's just insane. I think A.J. Brown is the most polished wide receiver. The combination of polish and athleticism is there. They use him a lot. I think some people aren't thinking of him as number one because he was used so much as a slot receiver at Ole Miss, although after DK got hurt, they moved him outside a bit. But guess what? Slot receivers are really useful in today's NFL. The Chargers, absolutely, it does seem like they're rich at the position, but they actually lost Tyrell Williams, of course, and they're counting on Mike Williams to step up into that number two role behind Keenan, but I do think, you know, I totally think it's worth going receiver there. So the Chiefs are next. I am picking for them, and they made a lot of interesting additions. I mean, they lost Justin Houston, D. Ford, so they did add Emmanuel Agba. One might think they would go edge rusher, but they also have a lot of needs in that secondary, as anyone with a pair of eyes saw in the playoffs and the regular season last year. They signed Bashaud Breeland, right? Steven Nelson walked. Oh. Their cornerbacks were just so bad. They added Tyrann Mathieu. Oh, I know Eric Berry is still there, but obviously we know not only did he have injuries, but when he came back, he wasn't really himself. And I'm going to just look. I'm not even going to pretend like I'm not biased in favor of this guy. He is the double whammy of my biases in that he is both Asian and played for Washington. But I love Taylor Rapp, and I think he would be a great fit in Kansas City. He's extremely versatile, so they could actually, I think, use him as a slot corner. He can cover tight ends. His optimal position is as a box safety. He is just an extremely, he's super hard hitting. He can thump. His open field tackling is great. He can cover. His speed is not elite, but I think he is a guy that you can count on for a multi-year NFL career. So that's my,
and I mean, I think if Rush Limbaugh still worked at ESPN, he would say that you were desirous of having an Asian American in the NFL, but that's fine. He's very good. I saw him play, you know, three or four times this year because I'm out here on the West Coast. And he held up very well all the time. Like, I've got no, especially at this point in the first round, I think that's a very good pick. I defend you in your bias of this pick.
All right. Who are the Packers taking?
Man, so we were just talking about gifting your aging quarterback with a little, you know, something to say, hey, look, man, we appreciate you. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, nonsense in the media. I know things are a little cold between us right now. But here, how about a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to smooth things over?
Ooh.
Would you feel better, Aaron Rodgers, if I gave you J.J. Arcega-Whiteside? It's a little bit earlier than some mocks have him. But I think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is the sort of guy that Aaron Rodgers could appreciate. He's always open. He's a guy who literally posts up defensive backs to get open. And with the accuracy of Aaron Rodgers, like, I think that's like a good fit for him. He seems like, and he's a big dude. He's like 6'2", 225. he fits well in like that climate up there. I could see him having thriving earlier than you'd expect if he gets up that way. So yeah, JJ, let's do it, man.
I love Arcega Whiteside. He is the guy where every time I was watching Stanford football last year, I would complain about it and say, this sucks, this is boring, and all of a sudden be like, well, that guy is good.
Yeah.
And he's always open in the sense that even if he's not open, he's open, right? Because he will go up and get the football. His contested catch ability is incredible. You will hear about 1,000 times over the next few years that his parents played basketball in Spain. He is of Spanish descent. That is going to be, I think, a very commonly referenced fun fact. So I like him. And I think it was Mike Renner at PFF who comped him to Jordy Nelson. So this is destiny, man.
Oh.
Packers, JJ,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm the Rams. I got the Rams next. I'm going to go center/guard and take Garrett Bradbury out of NC State, who... The only reason he might not be in first-round mocks is that he was a center, you know? And it's possible. I mean, so the Rams, we should talk about the Rams offensive line, which took the interior of the Rams offensive line. This is why I'm kind of keen on, replenishing, I guess, that position is, that's where they really struggled down the stretch. Andrew Whitworth came back. But you know, John Sullivan was really up and down. He's in his mid-30s now. Austin Blythe really struggled at guard. So I just think, Garrett Bradbury, who is potentially, I think, a day one starter in zone scheme, makes a lot of sense for Los Angeles. All right, you've got the final pick.
I'm the Patriots GM. Me and Bill Belichick, we've been in the lab going over prospects. You know, we have like 12, 13 draft picks in this draft. We love draft picks. We're excited about them. And we're just like, we're going to do what people don't expect us to do, which in some ways they're going to expect us to do. When I tell you that we're taking Andy Isabella at number 32, and don't ask me what I'm doing. You know what I'm doing. You know what I'm doing. Okay.
Full draw.
We don't talk about it out loud, but you know, hey, look, Andy Isabella, he ran a 4.31. He's deceptively fast. And, I think he'd be a good fit for our system in New England. So yeah, I mean, he's right down the road. I don't even know he has to move to get the camp. So, hey, it's even better. We don't get to pay for moving expenses.
This is a full troll pick. I like Andy Isabella. He's not my third best wide receiver. I think he has some limitations. He's a, you know, smaller slot guy, very fast. Obviously, he's going to get like 3,000 yards on the Patriots and score a million touchdowns. No, it's going to be really but they do need, regardless of how you feel about him, they do need a, they, I would definitely go wide receiver too there. So I like that notion. All right. So before we get to Taylor Rapp, as always, got a few questions for you.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Old Town Road remix, overrated or rated just right?
Rated just right. I can understand the enthusiasm around it. It's like when I liked MC Hammer, like it's like, oh, that seems really nice. Like at a time where we're divided, as people like to say. It just seems really nice and fun. So, yeah, it's properly
It brought
great.
The country together. It was also
it really
it's such a relief when Twitter is talking about something that everyone likes. I think that's part of the reason why I enjoyed it so much. You know, universally positive reception. Who was your favorite college player who did not thrive in the NFL?
Oh, well, yeah, I think maybe you know this, Vince Young. I feel like Vince Young was like a maybe a half decade early. I feel like he played for Jeff Fisher. I mean, I think Steve McNair's case for the Hall of Fame is that he thrived playing for Jeff Fisher. Vince Young was just amazing. And he was so good, he made me root for the University of Texas, which is something I would never do. It was all about fit, and it wasn't a good fit, and it went the way that it did. So, yeah, Vince Young.
I love the Jeff Fisher handicap Hall of Fame. It's like a par. okay, question three. Are you pro or con on the following subject? Mascots with giant humanoid heads.
Yeah, I'm probably anti. I think you should go with a good animal or
Me
like
too.
A heat or a magic. Yeah, like I just kind of seems like a cop out. And then sometimes it can go into like really uncomfortable caricature. So, you know, yeah, I maybe you could just stay away from making humans mascots, and let's just, you know, make it a wildcat. Do a, you know, do something like that, an eagle, you know, also, a bulldog.
There's so many great animals that aren't being deployed. Yeah. I mean, ask Dominique Foxworth, the narwhals, the sea otter, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I mean, why not? Yeah, just the banana slug, you know? Let's bring that back. Horned frogs. Like, that's so much you can do. So, like, why, you know, we don't have to do humans. Yeah.
Okay, you were famous when you came on the Morning Roast. You would do One's Gotta Go, where you'd be presented with four options and say, as the name suggests, which one's gotta go. I'm gonna just give you a One's Gotta Go that I came up with.
Ooh,
Twitter,
okay.
Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Which one's gotta go?
I gotta get rid of Facebook, man. I mean, I'm barely on it as it is right now. Facebook has gotten to the point where they send me notifications of other people's posts. Like, I'm just like, wait, I didn't even, isn't that what going to
me
Facebook
too.
Is for? Like, if I wanted to know what you're posting, like, I was like, hey, man, I'm not coming back, okay? That our relationship is sort of over, but I'm keeping it nice. And then they keep trying to draw me back, okay? They're just like an ex that just won't accept that it's over.
Facebook does that to me, too, and it's weird that they think that's the pull. Like, you know, an email saying, your cousin just had a baby. I'm like, this...
yeah.
I don't want to log on anymore.
right. Yeah, you get so much plausible deniability when you say you're on Facebook too. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I missed your birthday. I'm not on Facebook anymore. I didn't. There's so many things you don't have to respond to if you're not on Facebook. So yeah, Facebook.
Right answer. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny, who did a little bit of internet research for this one.
Oh God,
Joel. I noticed that on Twitter.com, you mentioned 17 times that you were a track champion when you were 10 years old. My question is, how come you don't talk about how fast you are now?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Lenny, I mean, you know, first of all, Lenny has stubby legs. Like, he doesn't even look fast enough to really talk about my speed.
His legs are disproportionately long for his body. That's not true at all.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. He seems very stubby legged. I'm sorry. I won't get unfollowed like I did by Quentin Williams' agent. I'm still fast. Like, I mean, let's not get it. Like, I know the Dominique we know kind of like tried to punk me on Twitter once talking about, I feel like he kind of tried to punk me a little bit. Like, I was afraid to like race him or something. And I'm not saying that I would beat him, but I would race him. You know what I mean? Like, I think I'm fast for a 40-year-old man who's 5'11" and 205 pounds. Like, I think, you know, I can go. Like, I can beat most people in the world. Yeah.
Do you think you could beat Lenny in a 40-yard dash?
Ooh, wow.
Sounds like a no. Sounds like a no. That's okay. There's no shame.
I feel like it depends on how the start goes. Like, I don't, you know. I'll put my money on myself. Like, I believe in myself. So, yeah, I think I could take him. It's nothing for me to come down to L.A. and run against Lenny. You know what I mean? I'm right up there. It's a 45-minute flight.
Joel Anderson will come down to L.A. to race my dog, who pretended to ask him a question. That's how petty he is. Hey, if you guys like pettiness and great sports talk, check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, Bo has part two of a series on the NBA Supermax contracts in a conversation with NBA PA Executive Director Michelle Roberts. That should be a really good one. He also chats with comedian Roy Wood Jr. and ESPN golf analyst Michael Collins on their past connection in the comedy industry. And there will be some Masters talk. And next, we have Taylor Rapp. So we have been talking about the draft, prospects, position groups, mocks, mocks of mocks, mocks of mocks of mocks, but I wanted to get inside the process a little bit, you know, during the lead up, and instead of just talking with my fellow gas bagging bloviators, I wanted to chat with one of the top prospects in the draft, a guy whose name you're going to hear a lot in the coming weeks and years. Once he's in the NFL, he's one of the top safeties in the class. NFL.com actually has him as the highest graded safety right now. Huskies fans like myself, bias alert, know him well. Two-time first team All Pac-12. Player viewers of High Noon might know him from a bit I did with my pal Pablo Torre about our obsession with Asian American athletes and finding out who is Asian, because like yours truly, he is a Hapa. And it's more likely than not that he will be the highest drafted Chinese American player in NFL history. Welcome to the show, Taylor Rapp.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Do you know, like, who all the Chinese American players who have been drafted? I mean, it's kind of hard to find, actually. It takes a lot of aggressive Wikipedia searching.
All I really have kind of found out or heard about was Ed Wong. I think he was drafted in the fifth round. But other than that, I mean, like, maybe Patrick Chung. He's got, like, a quarter Chinese in him, right?
Yes, he was on the board, the shrine that we made.
I got Patrick Chung.
You can kind of tell, too. I mean, he's not like you and me where, like, it's very obvious. But, you know, when you're around Patrick Chung in person, you can definitely see it. And obviously, Pablo and I are always trying to guess. Do you ever do that when you're watching? You're like, maybe, is he?
Yeah, all the time. I try to guess their race and, you know, what kind of Asian they are. So, yeah, it's fun.
You know, you're right in the draft process.
Right.
And I feel like this really begins, like, it really sets in, I know, for prospects at the combine. What was the part that you enjoyed the most, and what was the strangest part?
The best part I had was just being in a place for 4 days, just being able to, like, compete and just talk to, interact with, like, all the best college football players in the whole U.S., obviously. The strangest part was, I'd say probably a couple of formal interviews that I had to do, just because of, depending on some teams, how they would attack the formal interviews, and some teams, you know, they'd ask a bunch of strange questions, like riddle questions, or some teams would like put up your bad film and then kind of like grill you and try to see how you react to that. That was definitely one of the strangest parts about the experience.
Yeah, some of the weird questions always get out. I mean, and I remember, I can't remember who said it, but it was the Seahawks who challenged someone to a staring contest.
Oh, I heard
Where you'll hear
that.
From guys, they get asked, you know, the guys always get asked, like, what animal would you be and stuff? Did you get asked anything goofy like that?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of, I think one team, I can't remember who, but they asked a bunch of real questions, but then I think another team, they asked me, like, if you were to kill someone, would you do it with a knife or a gun?
Definitely a gun, right?
First I said, well, I wouldn't kill anyone in the first place, but then they made me pick. And then I just said gun, just because, I don't know, it's faster. You know, there's no...
Gun is definitely the normal person answer.
Right. I think if you said a knife, that would raise a red flag for sure.
Definitely a knife. I really want to feel like that'd be really. Although I think you did the right thing by saying you wouldn't kill someone.
Right. Yeah.
That might be the move. Did you take the? A couple weeks ago, or I don't remember when it was at this point, I talked to the guys who actually administered the psych exam. Did you take that? It sounds like almost like a video game in some ways.
Oh yeah. There was a bunch of. So the first night that I got there was. I didn't think I was going to have to do anything, but I was up until like 1 a.m. doing psychology testing when I got there at like 6 o'clock at night. So there was a bunch of psychology testing, but I think I do remember the one that the other guy was talking about, like the video game, like literally it was like a gaming computer. And it would be like you're playing a video game.
You weren't the only Husky at the combine. There are a bunch of guys, guys we'll talk about. One guy, you know, I want to mention, like you, he's being mocked in the early rounds, first, second, Byron Murphy. And you guys are part of this recent tradition of incredible defensive backs coming out of Washington, Sidney Jones, Marcus Peters, Boone Baker. I mean, the list is really long. How do you think, like, that's the case at University of Washington these days?
First of all, it just goes to show, like, our defensive backs coach, Coach Lake, how well of a job he does developing young players. I mean, he obviously recruits great players, but I think he's the best in the business at developing young football players and achieving the maximum potential. Obviously, you can just look at his track record. It's right in the results. So, I mean, I think it all starts with recruiting good guys, but I think Coach Lake, he develops them like none other.
Yeah, I don't know if you know that. I did a story last year on Jalen Ramsey, and he actually, who's obviously, you know, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, and he almost went to UW. Became
no
very
way.
Close to being
that would have been crazy how things would have changed.
Well, but you weren't highly recruited out of high school, right? Like, you played at a pretty tiny school.
Yeah,
and
I played at
you
a really small, really
you know,
small
a top prospect.
I ended up getting recruited, like, pretty well, but it was more of, like, I had to, like, go out and take initiative and, like, get seen at college camps or college coaches because I knew, like, no college scouts or college coaches would be rolling up to Sehome High School up in Bellingham, Washington. So I really had to, like, get out there and try to get seen.
So your mom is Chinese. Your dad is Canadian. And I think I read somewhere that you were actually raised partly by your grandparents from China. What was that like?
Yeah. Both my parents worked a lot. They were always, I don't want to say always, but they traveled quite a bit. So when they were traveling, my mom's parents they played a big role in raising my older brother and I. My older brother and I are super close to them growing up. That's kind of how we learned to speak some Chinese because they didn't speak any English, so we had to communicate with them somehow. So our Chinese was a lot better when we were younger and we were around them a lot more. But as we got older, we kind of lost it just because we weren't around them and we weren't really around, like, speaking Chinese as much. But, yeah, they played a huge role in raising my older brother and I.
Did you guys speak Mandarin?
Yeah, we do.
And you never had to go to, like, Saturday school or anything like that to study?
Well, so my parents actually had my older brother and I in, like, a Chinese boarding school in Bellingham. But we were only there for, like, a couple of years, maybe even a year. That quickly ended.
Yeah. I used to have to go to a little bit of Saturday school to learn Korean, and my brother and I also quickly quit because we didn't like school.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we really learned the most Chinese just trying to communicate and talk to our grandparents and our mom like that.
So my proficiency now with Korean, I'm told, is that of a two-year-old. How are you with Chinese?
I mean, it's probably pretty bad, too. I don't know about a two-year-old, but I'd say maybe I don't know, maybe a 10-year-old, maybe.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Yeah, maybe eight to 10 years old.
Well, growing up playing football, how often did you come across other Asians in the game?
Not a lot that I could remember. That was the part that was, like, difficult for me when I was growing up because, obviously, there's not a lot of Asians in any major sports, like, let alone just football. There's really none in football when I was growing up. So, I mean, it was difficult for me not having someone to look up to or relate to.
Yeah, and how did people react to seeing you on the field? Just, I mean, being one of the very few, if not only, you know, Asian players in middle school, high school.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of people were kind of weirded out by it. You know, I was always, you know, one of the better players on my teams growing up and stuff like that. So, like, I think it kind of weirded people out. But, yeah, I mean, it was difficult because I think that played a huge part in, like, when I was trying to get recruited and stuff like that, just because I didn't look like the typical football player or, like, a typical football player in a college coach's eyes. I felt like I got overlooked quite a bit when I did go to, like, camps and stuff like that, just because I didn't look like a football player in their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can relate to that, not just as a woman, but also being Asian. You know, there aren't really people who look like me in sports, or not that many either. You know, growing up, obviously, not a lot of Asian American players playing football. How did your mom feel about you playing the sport, just given, listen, I got a Korean mom, so, you know, enough said.
I don't think she really, like, was following along or, like, picked it up at first. I mean, maybe she just thought that, like, you know, it was good to be out there and, you know, getting around and getting activity in. But she really didn't like it at first because of how physical and, you know, how dangerous it could be. But, I mean, I think it really grew on her, and she really understood, like, how special of a player I could be and, you know, how far that the game could take me. I mean, look at me now. I've got 4 years of education paid for, everything like that, and I have a chance to go in the National Football League. So, I mean, I think at first she really didn't get it, but now she's really fully understanding and, you know, getting on board.
So tell me about your tattoos.
I actually recently just got two more Chinese-based tattoos last week when I was home with my brother. So the first one that I got was right on my side of my stomach, on my ribs. So they're Confucius' five virtues: kindness, justice, morality, wisdom, and loyalty. And those are kind of just big five traits that I try to, like, live my life by and try to, you know, everything I do, I try to really have those five virtues and traits. And then I have one on my shoulder for my Chinese zodiac, so the year I was born, year of the ox in China, 1997. And then, like, a little Chinese proverb right under it that means, like, change the world, make a difference in the world. And then I recently just got two new ones, like I was saying. I got one on my chest, just a Chinese character. On my left side, right over my heart, it just means love in Chinese. And then one on my calf for my brother and I, just because he played a huge role in me growing up, and, you know, we always had a tight brotherly bond, and, you know, he helped me out in everything I did. I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am today without him. So I just kind of wanted to get a tattoo, pay tribute to him and, you know, how much he means to me. So the graphic is two kids walking, and then there's one little brother and one older brother. They're like holding hands, walking away in the distance, and then the little brother's looking up to the big brother, and then right over the little brother's head, I got a Chinese character for little brother, and then he ended up getting the Chinese character for older brother. But it was his first tattoo, so he didn't jump on the graphic yet, but I think he's going to end up getting the graphic of the two kids coming up.
Nice. I'm also Year of the Ox. Definitely not the same year as you. And that's really upsetting to hear that year said out loud. But so it sounds, you know, you mentioned earlier growing up, you didn't have a lot of, like, Asian American football players to look up to. Do you feel like, you know, you're getting these tattoos, you're kind of putting yourself out there a little bit in terms of identity. Is it meaningful to you knowing that, you know, other Asian American kids potentially playing the sport could look up and see you, Taylor Rapp, on the field?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's probably my biggest mission right now that I'm trying to do. I think I'm trying to be an inspiration to the young Asian American kids who didn't have, like, a role model look up to like I didn't have when I was growing up. So I want to fill that role for them and be able to have someone they can look up to and aspire and have someone they can relate to, just because of the small amount of Asian Americans even in any sports. So I just want to be able to inspire them and show them that, you know, it can be done if you put your mind to it and, you know, try to shatter the stereotypes like you were saying.
Did you know Kyler Murray is part Korean?
I did know that. I saw him on the board you and Pablo put up.
It's very important to me that people know that.
How much?
Well,
is,
let's
know?
Talk.
I think his mom.
I think it's
a court,
yeah.
Yeah, very small, right?
It's small. Yeah, enough. We're still claiming
yeah.
it for sure.
Right. Right.
But
right. yeah. Right.
It is small. It's small. You know, we'll claim anyone, especially someone that talented. Well, let's talk about the draft a little bit before I let you go. You know, are there any players you look at right now, any safeties in the league at the moment that you sort of see yourself modeling your game after?
There's a bunch of safeties that I like watching. And I think a lot of my game come from a lot of their game. I think some of the newest young safeties like Derwin James and Jamal Adams, I think those guys are super versatile in what they do and how the defense uses them in their scheme. I also, being from Seattle, from Bellingham, just Earl Thomas and the way he plays the game and the intensity and the motor he has, the way the game is meant to be played. But, you know, there's a lot of other safeties like Harrison Smith, Eric Weddle, Eric Berry that I really love watching.
All right, last question. If you had to kill someone, would you choose between a knife and a hammer?
Oh, a knife and a hammer. Oh, that's a hard one. I would say a knife because the hammer, I don't know. I guess if you hit him one time, I don't know. I don't want to get into it. I'd say the knife because depending on the spots, you could really do it as fast as possible. But, yeah, you switch it up on me. Switch it up from a gun.
Yeah, there's no non-psychopath answer.
What about
All right, Taylor, thank you so much for coming. I don't have to answer the questions. This is my podcast, but I would agree. I would say knife.